Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a paid advertisement for BetterHelp. With so many things vying for your attention, it's easy to push life's struggles to the back of your mind and keep things bottled up. And when things have piled up high enough, I understand all too well how much harder it can be to get things off your chest. But I also know that a problem shared is a problem halved. And this is where BetterHelp can come in. Therapy can provide you with a safe space to open up and work through whatever's been weighing you down, so you can focus on showing up as your best self every day. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Visit betterhelp.com/tortoise to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/tortoise.
Tortoise. This interview is being tape recorded. I'm Detective Sergeant 2862 Geoffrey Walton from the Police Station Sunderland. What's your full name?
George Robert Townshire.
This is an interview room at Sunderland Central Police Station. It's 4 p.m. on Friday the 16th of October 1992.
Well, I've got to tell you, that's a lie as well. I think it's about time we start talking about the truth here. Because you spelled that one lie after another lie.
And that's a bastard and gun ball's head.
It's tricky to make it out, and that's because the tape is from 1992. The officer says, I think it's about time we started telling the truth here. Because you're spouting off one lie after another lie. He's interviewing George Heron, the main suspect in the Nicky Allen murder. The interviewing officer is pushing for a confession.
George, try to come up of here and tell the truth.
George, come on, the truth.
I didn't do it.
Then what made you do it?
I didn't kill her. This is one of George Heron's denials. In total, he denies killing Nicky more than 120 times.
George, if we've got to prove it all the way to the court, then you're going to constantly deny it. What are people going to think if you're convicted? So all we've got to do is prove that you walked away with it, haven't we?
I didn't kill him.
He keeps saying that over and over again. But that doesn't mean to me he didn't do it.
You can keep saying that over and over again, but that doesn't mean to me that you didn't do it. These are the final few minutes of interview tape before George Heron confesses to a crime that he didn't commit. I'm Julie Bindle, and from Tortoise, this is Three Doors Down, a murder, a mother, and a 30-year investigation. This is episode 3, Confession. In October 1992, Heron had been questioned for 3 days. I've listened to hours of these tapes, and even in listening, it's uncomfortable.
I was being led to believe by the police and other people that weren't looking for anybody else.
I wanted to speak to someone who knows how interview tactics work to see what he made of the George Heron interviews.
I think what people didn't realise, Julie, was the power of persuasion or the influence that people could have, especially with dealing with vulnerable people.
I'd met Gary Shaw on the Sunderland University campus, where Gary is now a professor of professional practice and recognised as one of the leading experts on major crime investigation in the UK. He retired from Northumbria Police in 2007, having served for 40 years. In his 60s, Gary is small and wiry, with close-cropped hair and a kindly face.
I was brought up in the confession-based culture, with, to be fair, limited interview training. You just learn from the culture that was there. And a mark of success for detectives at the time interviewing was confession.
Although he wasn't involved in the Nicky Allen case back in 1992, he's since used it as a classic example of poor policing practice and has developed a protocol that he teaches to budding coppers. Can I read you some of the transcript from the Heron interrogation, as was then?
Mm-hmm.
Heron, I didn't kill her. Well, I believe you did kill her, George. I didn't. I believe you did. I didn't. George, you've got to help tell the truth about this. I am telling the truth. Come on. The truth, George. Come on. We're not going to mess about. You've told lies. There's lies all the way along the line. You know what happened to Nicky Allen. You do, George. And you know exactly. Her death. I don't. Now, repeatedly, just in this section, on this one tape that we have, he ends up, Heron, saying, I'm not admitting to summat I didn't do. And the investigating officer says, we are not asking you to admit that you didn't do. We are asking for the truth about the murder of Nicky Allen. Now, that's a very odd and twisted way of putting something. Right. They're playing with his mind.
The problem with assumptions of guilt, right? Because assumptions of guilt is exactly what it says on the tin. So therefore, and if you couple that with, look, my aim of the interview was to get a confession, then you can see how questions of that nature get put together.
The case of the Cardiff Three, in which three innocent men were convicted of the murder of Lynette White in 1990, became a notorious example of how not to conduct an interview. One defendant, Stephen Miller, confessed to the murder after 13 hours of bullying, oppressive interviews.
In some pockets of the world, people still don't agree with false confessions, so they think the confessions, if it's a confession, it's a confession. Now, we know from a lot of more studies that have gone on by some very eminent people how persuasion can result in false confessions at times.
Why would someone confess to a serious crime that they haven't committed?
It might be an internal issue for themselves. They could be trying to protect somebody else. It could be they might have a particular mental health issue that has convinced themselves that they've committed the offence, but they haven't. Without a doubt, it could be the power of persuasion in an interview for a suggestible person. There's sometimes the internal and external pressures.
Heron has obviously denied on several occasions that he killed Nicky Allen.
Yeah.
And they say this. Now, George, you've been asked that question a few times tonight and you never answered it. Obviously, he had answered it on numerous occasions. Are you going to tell us why you've been telling lies? It's because you've got something to hide, isn't it? They continue. Well, why have you been telling lies? Why won't you answer? And Heron says, how would you like to be accused of a murder you didn't commit? And they respond, you might have convinced yourself you haven't killed Nicky, but George, at the end of the day, you are going to have to face up to reality. You are going to have to tell the truth. So what they're saying to him is, you have convinced yourself. In other words, there's some kind of, again, it's a mind kind of bending exercise.
I think fundamentally, Julie, gets back to this assumption, isn't it? You know, and the culture that existed at the time, where people have got this guilt assumption whereby, look, the material I've got, the evidence I've got, suggests that he is responsible. I think with all the pressures that everything else that's going on at the time, the questions or the approaches were done with the best intentions. But there was nobody at the time telling people that wasn't the right approach to be taken from a persuasive point of view. It's not our job to use any type of emotional tactic to get somebody to admit something. Our job is to conduct a thorough investigation as best we can, gather as much material in as best we can.
I couldn't help thinking here of the interview with Joe Bradley and how he felt Heron looked like a stereotypical child murderer.
He looked weak, he looked feeble, he looked pale, greasy hair, big glasses. He was kind of your stereotypical child murderer, if you like.
Northumbria Police's report of an inquiry into the case, commissioned by Chief Constable John Stevens and conducted by ACC Alan Oliver, was published in 1994. It focused only on the way the interviews with George Heron were conducted. This wasn't just a bad interview. Whole chunks of Heron's story started to fall apart. Heron was vulnerable, and he was there without a qualified lawyer. The person representing Heron was not even a paralegal, but a legal secretary, and therefore had no training or experience whatsoever in ascertaining whether a suspect was being treated fairly during the interview process. The judge ruled Heron's confession inadmissible, saying, "That must never be allowed to happen again." But Heron did have an alibi. He was sofa surfing at his sister Michelle's flat in Weargarth, where she lived with boyfriend Danny Baker. Both Michelle and Danny confirmed to police during the door-to-door inquiries that Heron was at home with them all evening, except when he popped out to the Boar's Head pub to buy cigarettes. But police continued to suspect that Heron was the killer. And when he was arrested, so were Michelle and Danny, on suspicion of assisting an offender. The police held Danny in custody for 3 days, until he finally withdraws the alibi and agrees to a new version of events that potentially puts Heron at the scene of the crime. The police also emphasised the eyewitness accounts.
There was a misrepresentation or maximisation of material that was commonplace, I think, in the interviews of the time.
There was false evidence put to Heron during interrogation, including that he had been seen with Nicky by 2 separate witnesses. One witness, Doreen Graham, described a man standing close to Nicky outside the Boar's Head, a 3-minute walk from the old exchange building, fitting Heron's description. A few minutes later, another woman described a man walking towards the exchange building, where Nicky's body was found the next day, with a child skipping happily behind him. But the 2 descriptions had striking differences, and both women were unable to pick Heron out at an identity parade held after he was charged. Trial judge Mr. Justice Mitchell said something shocking. He suggested that the reason police delayed the identity parade until after Heron was charged was deliberate. He believed it was to avoid the risk of the women not picking Heron out and damaging the chances of a confession. In the police interview, the officers told Heron there had been confirmed sightings of him with the child outside the pub and walking with her moments later. And then, an image of the killer was composed by a police sketch artist. A line drawing of a clean-shaven man with cropped hair. Heron's hair was longer, he had a moustache, and he wore glasses. When Heron's case was acquitted, the police announced that they were not looking for another suspect. But the image of the clean-shaven man with cropped hair fitted the description of another resident on Weargarth, the same man who was described in the CCTV footage, the man who lived 3 doors away from the place where Nicky Allen first went missing, David Boyd.
I think it was important for me to say, ultimately, this case involved one person, and that was David Boyd alone. And I think from an investigative perspective, the case is over, and we have got David Boyd convicted, and he'll be sentenced next week.
Lisa Theaker is the chief investigating officer who stood on the court steps in May this year after Boyd was finally convicted for Nikki's murder. Lisa's investigation is what brought the right killer to justice. But what happened in the 3 decades in between? In the year after Nikki's murder, Sharon was in a kind of fugue state, existing day to day, trying to take care of her 3 girls. She relied on prescription medication and alcohol to get her through. Heron, the only suspect, had been acquitted. Police had made it clear that as far as they were concerned, Nikki's killer had got away with it. Eventually, after those first dark months, something in her snapped. It was at this point that Sharon realised that the police were treating her daughter's murder as a cold case. In other words, not actively investigating it at all.
I had a few conversations with the police and they didn't have funding. They didn't have cold case teams and that then. So that told me that the police that was dealing with Nikki's case in the first place wasn't trained enough to deal with a murder case.
Sharon felt as though the case was slipping away.
Kept asking for meetings with the police, time after time. They were always busy and there wasn't seem to be anybody looking into Nikki's case. Nikki's case and the way I was tricked shouldn't have happened.
Sharon was becoming desperate. Desperate to be listened to and also desperate for people to come forward.
Nikki's case could have been sorted out many other cases years ago. And it wouldn't have took all this policing. I believe the police knew who murdered Nikki all this time. And they'd missed that opportunity.
Sharon did 3 things. She drew a map of the Garths. She filled in what she knew about who lived there and where the gaps were. She then set out to complete the puzzle, to find out the name of every single man living in the Garths at the time Nikki went missing.
And I just sat in a room all the time without anybody around us. And I'd done that for weeks at a time. And I focused on the Garths' house, every house. I even went out to people's houses. And this house just stuck out all the time.
The house that David Boyd lived in.
Boyd was her partner and Caroline was there with her daughter. There was a little girl that lived there. That's how Nikki knew the little girl. They used to all play on the veranda and that she was only about that big.
So Caroline was the partner of David Boyd and they were 3 doors away.
It was about 26 years to come forward to say that there was a man living in their house. They kept quiet for 26 years. I wasn't accusing anybody. All I wanted to know was, what happened to your partner? Because a partner just disappeared. I was just asking a simple question. That's how it became that he did get arrested, through a simple question what the police should have asked.
So basically, you had a role to play in the police looking at Boyd.
I've been mentioning for a few years about Boyd.
Sharon's campaign to find the killer took over her life. She even moved to an area of Sunderland where certain people lived who she suspected might know something but had never spoken out. She began to purposely get herself arrested so that she would be able to speak to police and find out exactly what, if anything, was happening with the investigation. Frustrated and angry that the police only seemed to contact her to either tell her they had nothing to report or to ask how she was.
Because I told them not to come back to me door because I got sick of being let down by them. Not to come back to me door until they've charged the suspect. She said, and we won't come back to your door unless we're not 100%, 102% that we've got the killer.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind.
When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to monday.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I first got involved and became the senior investigating officer of this case in 2016.
This is Lisa Theaker.
And that was the first time that I'd met Sharon. And Sharon has, you know, got a real mistrust of the police, understandably.
Can you talk me through how you were first alerted to Boyd?
Yeah, so in 2016, when I first got this case, I went to the lab. We knew that YSTR obviously was coming in new techniques, and it would give us a potential opportunity to revisit some of the exhibits in the case. So we spent some time going through like where we could test, where we could target, and looked at Nikki's clothes.
So the first time that Boyd was on your radar was through this DNA match that came back.
When the hit came back, we didn't have a match, we didn't have a name. I just had an unidentified profile in the February 2017. Sharon had a meeting that year in the April with the then Chief Constable, Steve Ashman, around an investigation, a reinvestigation, as she would term it. If I think probably from Sharon's perspective and everybody's, where it was agreed that ultimately we would effectively get more staff on the inquiry. We pulled together a list of names of males that had been involved in the inquiry originally, and there was 212 names. And the plan was to work through all of them and take their samples of DNA.
The term nominations in police jargon means a person who cannot be eliminated as suspects unless they meet particular criteria. For example, they were in the area, knew the victim, broadly fitted the description of the suspect.
We took the first sample in July. We took David Boyd's sample on the 4th of October.
So Boyd wasn't actually on your radar prior to this scientific examination of the clothing?
What I would say is when I first started looking at this case, genuinely, it was like a mountain. Like, where do you start? I had 212 males names, but the starting point had to be the forensics. So 4th of October, we take his sample, and then I get his name on the 3rd of November.
From where?
From the lab. So basically, we submitted his sample, and then they come back and say, David Boyd matches.
So as you know, Lisa, Sharon has said that before, prior to 2016, when you took on the job, that she had given police a map of the Garth with flats marked where men had lived that hadn't been investigated as suspects, as potential suspects, and that one of those was the flat where Boyd was living, three doors away from Nikki's grandfather, Dickie Prest.
When we would go and see Sharon, or when officers would go and see Sharon, understandably, she was talking to officers and she was giving different people's names. So in this inquiry, we've looked at 1,226 men, or tried to identify that many people. And within that number, some of the names and people that Sharon has put forward as well.
Boyd had a number of names, including Bell and Smith. So Sharon told me some time ago that she moved to Ryup in order to talk with the Carolines to find out who this David Smith Bell was, what the name was that we now know is Boyd that he was using. and that it was through talking to them that she discovered that he was David Boyd. So did that not come before he was on your radar?
No, the name has come subsequently.
I've been in regular contact with Sharon since 2006 and do recall her telling me, way before 2016, that she was desperate to get the name of Caroline's partner who was living with her in the same block from where Nikki went missing.
But once we had David Boyd's name and then I started to look at him on our systems, that's when the hair started to kind of go on the back of my neck a little bit.
The team had established that Boyd was familiar with the old exchange building where Nikki's body was found. The timings on his original alibi were false, which put him potentially at the scene of the murder. And he was a convicted child sex offender.
And ultimately, Boyd was the only DNA and the only person of concern in the inquiry. So we arrested him in the April of 2018.
Yeah, I'm Terry. This is Marty, the part of the team that's reinvestigating the murder of Nikki Allen.
Yeah.
Okay. Part of that investigation has led us to suspect that you may have had some involvement in that. Okay.
I'm
arresting you on suspicion, okay, of that offence. You do not have to say anything, but it may harm the offence if you do not mention, when questioned, something which you later lie in court. Anything you do say.
He was never going to admit it, looking back. He answered the questions very straight-faced, but looked nervous and the leg repeatedly moving. Kind of get the impression that he thinks, or he's convinced himself, or that he was going to get off and that he was going to get out.
Are you expecting other victims to come forward?
So we have looked extensively around any other offending in Northumbria's area, Cleveland's area, Durham area, to see whether there is anything potentially that we could link to him, and we haven't found anything.
Because it would be highly unusual for a child killer to stop offending and to just retire from offending.
He was on the sex offenders register for 10 years and he was monitored throughout that time. So there was no offending known then. So, but you would naturally think that there would be something else.
But who is going to answer to the catastrophic failures of that 1992 investigation? Because there's an assumption, I think, that it was just about the interviews that were the problem. We had Darren Baker and Michelle Heron locked up until they changed their story about Heron's alibi. That's corruption, not incompetence, surely.
So things absolutely were done very different. And you're right, it wasn't just around the interviews, and the judge touched on that as well about how evidence had been misrepresented and stuff. There was a review done back in the day. I know there was an assessment made in terms of some of the allegations that were made and nothing was proven then. I know that Sharon's made a number of allegations over the years that has been looked at as well more recently. Massive mistakes were made. And the implications and that have been huge onto Heron, onto the investigation and getting justice for Sharon and her family.
So what do you think are the consequences of the 30-year delay in getting a man locked up for this murder?
What I can say from my perspective here is, without the advances in the DNA, we wouldn't have identified David Boyd.
Even though he lived three doors down from Nikki's grandfather and he was a sex offender?
And I think that comes back to even just, it's not that small, 212 people. There was 118 people alone who were nominated as matching the artist's impression.
Were all those nominations sex offenders?
So we had, I think it was just over 20 people within that category, and they weren't all people convicted.
Do you remember the time that you told Sharon Boyd had been arrested?
I do. I remember that vividly. And that was a, it kind of makes me feel a bit emotional about it now, talking about it actually, because that was a massive, massive moment.
They smiled. And just, they said they wouldn't come back and they didn't. And she smiled at us. And I knew, the three of them just smiled at us. I couldn't walk for a bit after that, like.
Sharon came face to face with Lisa Theaker, who had finally found the right man. A man whose name Sharon had scribbled on paper while the case went cold. How did it take the police that long to interview him? The police missed multiple steps in hunting for Nicky's killer. Mistakes that feel like they should have been a one-off. But a few miles away, and just a few years apart from when Nicky was murdered, another working-class mother went head-to-head with the police when their investigation into her daughter's murder fell apart.
And as I leaned over the bath, my knees went against the bath panel, and it had always been loose at one end. And as I leaned over, my knees went against the panel, and it was under the bath. I was absolutely hysterical. And I ran downstairs as I'm screaming, she's under the bath, she's under the bath.
These two mothers did more to get their daughter's murderers in the dock than the officers during initial investigations. Why should a mother be responsible for solving their child's murder? And how were these women able to find leads that the police missed? This series was reported by me, Julie Bindle. It was written by me and Joanna Humphreys. The producer was Joanna Humphreys. The narrative editor was Gary Marshall. The sound design and original theme is by Tom Kinsella. The executive producer was Jasper Corbett.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.